Hello, everyone. My name is Hannah, and you're listening to Mystic and Murder, a paranormal, unexplained, and true crime podcast. On today's episode, we will be discussing Wellington, Florida's killer clown case and the tragic death of Marlene Warren. Marlene was born Marlene Mae McKinnon on April 15, 1950. Anyone who knew her described her as friendly, loving, courteous, respectful, and kind. She was the type of person who would do anything for anyone. In her early teenage years, Marlene was a very talented painter and had painted professional-looking portraits of clowns at just 14 years old. These pictures would be hung, and still hang today, in a special room in the family home. Marlene's family had a deep love for the circus and clowns. They had an entire room in their home dedicated to it, and they called it the circus room. Marlene married young and had her first son, John, in 1966, just 2 weeks before her 16th birthday. In 1969, she and her then-husband welcomed their second son, Joseph. Marlene and her first husband divorced, and at 20 years old, Marlene remarried to a man named Michael Warren. Her sons Johnny and Joe Ahrens would grow up knowing Mike as their father. Together, Mike and Marlene owned several businesses and rental properties, many of which were in Marlene's name. Marlene managed all of their rental properties, and Mike was a used car salesman in charge of their business, Bargain Motors. At the time of Marlene's death, they lived in Wellington, Florida. Wellington is an affluent village located in Palm Beach County, and it's about half an hour from West Palm Beach. Wellington is popular among celebrities. Bill Gates, Bruce Springsteen, Tommy Lee Jones, and Vanilla Ice are just a few who live in Wellington or own property there. It's known that Madonna has rented a house there during the equestrian season. In 1985, Prince Charles and Princess Diana visited Wellington, as Prince Charles played in a polo match at the Palm Beach Polo and Country Club. Wellington is huge when it comes to the equestrian scene. It's home of the Palm Beach International Equestrian Center, and it's known as the equestrian capital of the world. There's actually an entire community called the Wellington Equestrian Club, guarded and gated with large homes, equestrian farms, trails, and bridle paths. I'm actually really familiar with Wellington. When I was growing up, one of my aunt and uncles lived there, and even though I lived in New York, I would visit them often. The Equestrian Club was one of my favorite communities in Wellington. Another one of my favorites was the Aero Club, which is where Marlene Warren and her family lived. The Aero Club is another exclusive subdivision of Wellington. This private aeronautical community was built in the early 1980s, and each home's backyard connects to a private runway in the center of the community. This was a perfect location for the Warrens because Mike had his own airplane. Marlene and Mike had built quite the life together, but things weren't as perfect as they seemed. On September 23, 1988, Marlene's firstborn son, Johnny, died in a car accident at just 22 years old. After that, things were never really the same. In an interview with 48 Hours, Joe said that after his brother's death, Mike just wasn't there for him or Marlene. He wasn't just MIA emotionally, but he was rarely home. Marlene and Mike's relationship turned rocky. Just weeks before her death, Marlene shared her troubles with her mom, Shirley. She told her something that no mother wants to hear. She said, "If anything happens to me, Mike did it." When Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours asked Shirley what her response was, she said, quote, "I told her she could come home," end quote. Just 2 weeks before her death, Marlene told Joe that they would be moving soon. Sadly, Marlene never went home. On May 26, 1990, Marlene was cooking breakfast for Joe and three of his friends at their home on Takeoff Place. Through the glass front door, they could see a clown walking up the drive, carrying balloons and a basket of flowers. Marlene, who loved clowns, excitedly went to answer the door. From the living room, which was still in plain sight of the front door, Joe and his friends heard Marlene say, "Oh, how pretty!" Then, they heard what they thought was a balloon pop, until they saw Marlene fall to the floor. Joe and his friends ran up to Marlene's side. Joe's friend Jeannie rolled her over and saw a big, bloody hole in Marlene's upper lip. The clown had pulled out a handgun and shot Marlene in the face. As Marlene was lying wounded in the front entry of her home, the clown casually walked back to their car, a white Chrysler LeBaron. It was still running, and the driver's door had been left open. Joe yelled at the clown, trying to get them to turn around, but it wasn't until the clown got in the car that they turned to look at Joe. Then, they calmly and casually drove away, as if nothing had happened. A neighbor who heard the commotion called 911. Joe, who had a broken leg and was in a cast at the time, ran to his car and jumped in. Jeannie hopped into the passenger seat, and they went on a hot pursuit. Joe was speeding, trying to catch the car, but they lost it. They went back to the house where paramedics were working on Marlene. They loaded her into the ambulance and took her to Palms West Hospital. She was in extremely critical condition and was put on life support. Back on Takeoff Place, detectives were questioning Joe and his friends. They were all sitting down, about to eat breakfast, when the clown walked up the drive. The shot was fired at 10:51 a.m. They all said the shooter was wearing a multicolored clown suit, a bright orange afro-style wig, a red nose, and their face was covered in white and red happy face makeup. The shooter was wearing military-style boots rather than clown shoes. They all thought the shooter to be somewhere around 6 foot tall, but because of the clown makeup and costume, they were unable to determine if the shooter was male or female. Joe did recall one important identifying feature, though. The shooter had dark brown eyes. After questioning, Joe went to the hospital and sat vigil at his mother's bedside while police continued to investigate the scene. They didn't have much to go off of, other than the description of the shooter, the color and make of the getaway car, and some flowers and balloons left at the scene of the crime. The flowers appeared to be a Memorial Day basket arrangement, and there were two balloons. One was a circular Mylar balloon with a scene from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs on it, and the other was a red, heart-shaped Mylar balloon that said, "You're the greatest." The helium-filled balloons were tied with red and pink ribbons, garnished with small silver bells. With what little they had, the detectives went to work. With the shooter still at large, they put out a bolo, or a be on the lookout, for someone wearing a clown costume, because they didn't have anything else to go off of. They began calling costume stores, florists, and supermarkets in the area, trying to determine where the items were purchased from. Just 3 hours after the shooting, at 1:33 p.m., police received an anonymous tip from a female caller. She said, quote, "Marlene Warren was just shot," end quote, and suggested that the investigators may want to look into Marlene's husband, Mike Warren, and someone named Sheila Keene. Who is Sheila Keene, and why would this anonymous tipster be telling police to look into her? Well, it turns out that Sheila Keene was an employee of Bargain Motors, one of Mike and Marlene's companies. She was a 26-year-old single mom who had recently separated from her husband in January of 1990. She also had a reputation for being fearless. She was Bargain Motors' repo woman, and she was known to carry a gun while she was repossessing cars. As you can imagine, it can be a pretty dangerous job, so Sheila told coworkers that she carried it for her safety. But what was it about Sheila that would cause someone to give her name to the police? What motive would she have? Well, rumors were circulating that Sheila and Mike were having an affair. Other employees of Bargain Motors stated that Mike and Sheila would often take long lunches together. Some gave statements that they had seen Mike and Sheila hugging and kissing. In the 48 Hours episode, employee Della Ward stated, quote, "There was no doubt about it. They were definitely seeing one another," end quote. With this new tip, police decided to question Mike Warren first. At 3:18 p.m., the interview began. Mike said that at the time of the shooting, he was on his way to Calder Racetrack with two of his buddies. Calder Racetrack is about an hour and 10 minutes away, and his alibis were confirmed. Mike was nowhere near the scene of the crime when the shooting took place. He also denied having an affair with Sheila. At 7:30 p.m., detectives spoke with Barbara Costacone, owner of one of the only three costume shops in Palm Beach County at the time. Police learned that just 2 days prior, someone had purchased a clown costume, an orange afro clown wig, clown makeup, extra face whitener, and a sponge nose, all in cash. As a side note here, whoever purchased these items with the intention of shooting someone while wearing them really didn't think it through. They purchased all of the items described at the scene from the same place, all at once. It did make things much easier for detectives, though, so that's cool. On May 24th, Deborah Offord was one of the clerks closing up the costume shop that night. It was 6 p.m. and the store had already closed. Someone knocked on the door, saying that they needed to buy a costume. Deborah told the person that they were closed and asked if they could come back tomorrow. The individual seemed to be in a hurry and was very insistent that they needed the costume that night, saying they knew exactly what they wanted, so Deborah and the other clerk allowed them in. So who was this person? Deborah described a woman with long, straight, chocolate brown hair, about 5'8", wearing jeans and a men's work shirt. She also recalled that the woman had big brown eyes. Detectives showed Deborah and the other clerk a photo lineup consisting of 6 women that matched the description given. They were each shown the lineup at different times, and they both picked out the same woman from the lineup. Can you take a wild guess who it was? If you guessed Sheila Keen, you're correct. Deborah also had pointed to another woman with a similar nose as Sheila and said it could have been that woman, although she was 75% sure it was Sheila. The other clerk had only picked out Sheila's picture. So now we know where the costume was purchased and potentially by whom, so that leaves the balloons, flowers, and the white Chrysler LeBaron. Further investigation led the police to discover that one of the balloons was very unique. So much so that they were able to link it back to a specific supermarket. And not only that, but they were able to narrow it down to the exact store. The balloon was only sold at one location in all of Palm Beach County, and that was the Publix supermarket at Crosstown Plaza in West Palm Beach. Detectives learned that balloons identical to those at the crime scene had been purchased at 9:22 a.m. on the 26th, literally less than 90 minutes before the shooting. So now we know where the balloons were purchased and when, but it gets better. Not only did the person purchase balloons there, they also bought a Memorial Day floral arrangement, identical to the one at Marlene's house. Police spoke to the store clerks, who described the buyer as a white female with dark brown hair. Again, we have a description that matches Sheila Keen. Something else to note? That specific Publix was less than a mile away from the Pine Ridge at Haverhill Apartments, and I bet you can guess who lived there. Sheila. The day after the shooting, police decided to question Sheila Keen. She acknowledged that there were rumors circulating about a romance between her and Mike, and she admitted that they had gone on business trips together, but she also denied having an affair, saying the two were just friends. When asked for her whereabouts during the shooting, she said she was out doing her job, repossessing cars. When detectives asked her which car she was looking for and where, she wasn't able to provide any details. She couldn't remember. Odd, considering this was just one day later. She denied having possession of a clown costume and denied shopping at Publix on May 26th. Sheila's neighbors and other residents at Pine Ridge had different things to say when it came to Mike and Sheila's relationship. Sheila had moved into Pine Ridge in January of 1990. Apparently, Mike was there often. So often that they assumed he was her husband. He would come and go at all hours of the day or night. Residents were able to identify both Sheila and Mike from photographs. The apartment security guard said that Mike had special privileges at the complex. Sheila had said that Mike was to be allowed in the complex without calling or notifying her first. So, despite their denial, it was obvious that something was going on between them. During the investigation, it also came to light that Mike was the one paying for Sheila's apartment. I don't know about you, but I've never had a boss that paid for my living arrangements just because they wanted to. 2 days after the shooting, Marlene's mom, Shirley, had arrived from Las Vegas. She joined Joe and Mike, who had both been sitting by Marlene's bedside since the shooting 2 days prior. Marlene was still unresponsive and on life support, with a bullet lodged in her spinal cord. The difficult decision was made to take Marlene off of life support. She was gone within a minute or two after turning off the machine and pronounced dead on May 28, 1990. Now, the police had a murder case on their hands. We'll get into that right after this message from our sponsor. On May 29th, the day after Marlene's death, an autopsy was performed on her body. The bullet that was lodged in her spinal cord was collected and submitted into evidence. A ballistic examiner determined that the bullet came from a gun with either a .38 or a .357 caliber. Interesting, because just 2 days prior, the police had interviewed Sheila Keene's husband, Richard Keene. The two had been separated for about 4 months at this point, but Richard told police that Sheila had called him about a month prior to the shooting. She claimed that her gun had gone missing and wanted to know if he had it, which he did not. The gun in question? A .38. So at this point, investigators have found out where the costume, flowers, and balloons were purchased. They've got matching physical descriptions of the woman who purchased the items, and they now know what murder weapon to look for. The only missing piece from the witnesses' statements was the getaway car, the white Chrysler LeBaron. 4 days after the shooting, it was found, abandoned, in a Winn-Dixie parking lot. The car was just 8 miles northeast of the crime scene and about 8.5 miles southwest of Sheila's apartment. These coincidences just keep piling up. Detectives searched the car, and although they didn't find a gun, a costume, or any fingerprints, police did find some other clues. Little orange synthetic fibers, like you'd see on a clown wig, and brown human hair. They also ran the plates and learned that the car had been reported stolen about a month before the shooting. Not uncommon for crimes, really, but it just so happens that this car had initially been a rental from a business called Payless Car Rental. So, how did it end up in a Winn-Dixie parking lot a month later? Police learned that the renters of the car had mistakenly returned the car to the wrong business due to an advertisement that looked extremely similar to the Payless car rental ad. The similar advertisement had the same colors, similar fonts and patterns, and it also said Payless in big bold letters. It seems totally reasonable that someone might get the two businesses confused. So whose advertisement was that, you ask? Well, it was none other than Bargain Motors. The owner of Payless Car Rental believed that Mike was trying to confuse customers and steal business from him by producing a similar advertisement. Even with similar advertisements, you'd think that the couple would be made aware of their mistake, right? Wrong. Someone at Bargain Motors told them to just park the car in the street and leave the keys in the visor. It was reported stolen that same night. Now, with the direct link to Mike's business and Sheila's place of employment, police were able to obtain a search warrant for Bargain Motors and Sheila's apartment. Just hours after finding the car, they began their search of Sheila's residence. Unfortunately, they didn't find a gun or a clown costume, but they did manage to get some of Sheila's hair from her bathroom trash can. Perhaps the most interesting thing they found was on the clothing inside Sheila's home. Tiny orange fibers. The hair and some clothing were submitted into evidence, and a criminologist compared the samples from Sheila's home to the ones found in the car. In both cases, the samples were found to be similar, not the same. Investigators ran DNA tests on both the human hair and the fibers, but unfortunately, DNA testing had only been around for 6 years at this time. The results were found to be inconclusive. Detectives had hit a standstill. All evidence they had against Sheila Keen was circumstantial. They had a tentative ID from the clerks at the costume store, a matching description from employees at Publix, a stolen car linked to Bargain Motors, knowledge that Sheila had owned a 38, and similar hair and fibers in Sheila's apartment. None of this was hard evidence. Prosecution just didn't have enough evidence to make an arrest. While detectives were searching Sheila's apartment, they were also searching Mike's business. They spent 5 hours looking through Bargain Motors, and they didn't find any evidence that would connect him to Marlene's murder, nor could they prove that Mike had stolen the Chrysler LeBaron. They did, however, discover that Mike was running a dirty business. Mike was arrested and charged with multiple counts of racketeering, grand theft auto, dealing in stolen property, false and fraudulent insurance claims, odometer tampering, and more. While he awaited his trial for that case, there was also the issue of settling Marlene's estate, which was reported to be over $1 million. Mike was already the beneficiary on Marlene's life insurance, but they had to determine who had control over the family businesses, rental properties, and who would get the Aero Club home. Sadly, but not surprisingly, Mike and Joe fought over the estate, and Mike won, leaving Joe with almost nothing at 22 years old. The killer clown case remained open, but they were never able to find the gun, costume, or wig. Now, this is just a thought I had, but I would imagine, living in Florida, it would probably be pretty easy to get rid of evidence, considering there's plenty of water around. That water definitely has alligators in it, and they'll eat pretty much anything. Those items could be long gone. Again, that's just speculation, but it's definitely a possibility. With no new evidence, the case went cold, and Wellington was left in a state of fear. The clown industry in Palm Beach suffered because no one wanted to hire clowns anymore. It was unknown if this was an isolated incident or if there was a killer clown on the loose. As for Sheila, she was never charged with anything, So she and her son packed up and left. As for Mike, the trial for his business fraud took place 2 years later in 1992. He was convicted of fraud and served almost 4 years in prison. And Joe? In the years after his mother's murder, he struggled for quite some time. He told interviewers that he felt numb and abandoned. He was constantly in and out of trouble. He used drugs and alcohol as a way to cope. And he had gotten married and divorced. You might think that this is where the story ends, but there's more. Fast forward to 2002, 12 years after the murder. In Las Vegas, Mike was getting married again at the Little White Wedding Chapel. His new bride was Sheila Keene. The two settled down together in Kingsport, Tennessee. In Kingsport, they owned and ran a burger restaurant called Purple Cow. Sheila had dyed her once chocolate brown hair blonde and introduced herself to everyone as Debbie. Supposedly, it was a childhood nickname, but Della Ward, her coworker at Bargain Motors, said that she had never known Sheila to have a nickname. The two purchased a lake house just across the state line in Abingdon, Virginia, as their weekend home. Their neighbors described Mike, and who they knew as Debbie, as nice, hardworking people. Employees at the Purple Cow thought differently. On the 48 Hours episode, two employees talked about their time working for Mike and Sheila. They said that Mike and Sheila didn't mention much about their life before, but they were aware that Mike had gone to jail for some time. The employees said that they were incredibly hard to work for and that Sheila, or Debbie as they knew her, was, quote, awful, aggressive, mean, just like Mike, end quote. There was also a rumor floating around the Purple Cow. According to the rumor, Sheila had been drinking and told someone that she killed Mike's ex-wife. The rumor had been shared in detail, even to the point where it was mentioned that she had dressed like a clown. In 2016, Mike and Sheila retired and sold the Purple Cow. They settled down at their 4,100-square-foot lake house, nestled in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Abingdon, Virginia. Their peaceful retirement would be short-lived, though, because a few years prior, in 2013, Palm Beach County Sheriff Rick Bradshaw and his cold case squad decided to take another look at the case. Lead Detective Paige McCann and her team reviewed the case from all angles. They called up old witnesses and tested the evidence again, this time with new technology. While reviewing the case, they also determined that there were additional items that needed to be tested. What these items were are currently unknown, but 27 years after Marlene's murder, the evidence went from circumstantial to rock solid due to advances in DNA technology. In August of 2017, the sheriff of Abingdon received a call from the Palm Beach County Sheriff asking his officers to track down Sheila Keene Warren. On September 26, 2017, surveillance watched Mike and Sheila leave their home. They didn't want to cause a scene in the neighborhood, so local police set a trap nearby their home. Cones were placed and flares were lit to slow traffic. To a bystander, it looked like a routine traffic stop. When Mike and Sheila pulled up in their black Cadillac Escalade, Mike was driving and Sheila was in the passenger seat. Lieutenant Dewey Fulton of Washington County Sheriff's Department asked them for their IDs, and when Sheila handed hers over, he said, "Ma'am, we have a warrant for your arrest." A video of her in the back seat of a police car was shared online, and the employees of Purple Cow said that it looked like she had the face of someone who, quote-unquote, finally got caught. The following week, Sheila was extradited to Palm Beach County. She was charged with first-degree murder with a firearm and denied bail. She's pleading not guilty and has hired a top defense attorney. The trial was initially set for May 29, 2021, but it has been pushed back multiple times. As of July 29th, the trial has been postponed to March 21, 2022 at the defense's request. Initially, the state was pursuing the death penalty, but have since reevaluated. In February of 2020, the state announced that they were no longer seeking the death penalty. It's possible that prosecutors were using the death penalty initially as a means to get Sheila to plead guilty or to admit that Mike was involved in some way. The investigation is still far from over, and Mike is still a person of interest. Just because he had an alibi doesn't mean he wasn't involved in another way. While his wife sits in jail, Mike Warren still lives in their Abingdon Lake house. In the 48 Hours episode, Peter Van Sant and his crew actually drove up to Mike's house and knocked on the front door. He didn't open the door, but spoke to them through the full glass pane, saying, "Definitely not," when asked if he helped to plan the murder. Peter asked if he had suggested that Sheila dress in a clown outfit, and he said, quote, "Who said she even did that? I don't think she had anything to do with this. If I thought she had something to do with this, I wouldn't have been with her." End quote. On March 30th, 2021, a pre-trial hearing was held. After 3.5 years of incarceration, Sheila's defense team requested that she be released and placed on house arrest until her trial. They claimed that she is innocent, and she could not possibly be the shooter because the witness statements say that the clown was about 6 feet tall and Sheila is only 5'8". They also mentioned that the shooter must have been a male due to witness statements, but in reality, the witness statements didn't specify, and they mentioned that they couldn't tell if it was a male or a female. They only thought that they were about 6 feet tall. In the end, the judge did not grant this request, so Sheila Keene Warren will stay in jail while she awaits trial. Until then, that's all the information I have on this case, but I'll be sure to provide an update after the trial. I want to give you guys a bit of a happy note to end the episode on, so I'll tell you about Marlene's son and where he is today. Joe Ahrens is now living in Iowa. He's built a life for himself there, and he owns a successful construction company. He knew his mother would want him to carry on with his life and try to be happy, so he attempted to do just that. If you're wondering how he got into construction, he got the idea from his mother. When Marlene ran several rental properties, she taught Joe many skills. Joe said that Marlene was able to fix most of anything, and if she couldn't, she would hire someone and have Joe sit there and watch as they repaired it. He learned a lot from doing that, and he decided to open his own business. When Joe learned of the arrest, he said that it was a good feeling, but also a sad one because his mother isn't here anymore. Joe is hopeful that the legal process will finally bring justice. That's all for today's episode. If you want to watch the 48 Hours and 2020 episode on this case, head to mysticandmurder.com and links will be under the show notes on the episodes page. New episodes of Mystic and Murder will be posted every other Sunday. Tune in, follow, and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. You can find the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at Mystic and Murder. You can send in an email at mysticandmurder@gmail.com with suggestions, requests, and even personal spooky stories. If you like what you hear and you want to support the podcast, you can go to www.patreon.com/mysticandmurder. You can click support at anchor.fm/mysticandmurder. You can make a donation at paypal.me/mysticandmurder. Or you can now buy merchandise. Head to www.mysticandmurder.com to learn more. Thank you all so much for listening, and I hope you sleep tight. Remember, all things weird lurk at night.